harping on the wars we fight, griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind him switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down our country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Running down a way of life, our fighting men have fought and died to keep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song that I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country halls, you're walking on the fighting side of me. I read about some squirrely guy that claims that he just don't believe in fighting. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down our country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Running down a way of life, our fighting men have fought and died to keep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song that I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country halls, you're walking on the fighting side of me. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Running down a way of life, our fighting men have fought and died to keep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song that I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me, and that's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. And of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Ah, I have to tell you. Advertisers, especially for big corporations, more and more seem to be at least as interested in pushing a cultural Marxist, leftist, anti-white, pro-homosexual social agenda as they are in actually moving the product. Now, this may be a bit of an exaggeration, but I'm talking about major companies, and I've detailed some ads I find very offensive from some of Canada's banks and certain other companies. I was watching TV a couple nights ago, and I saw this ad several times, and it's for a winery called Inniskillen. Now, Inniskillen is it's kind of a middle of the road Canadian winery, not at the top end in terms of price and quality, and certainly not at the bottom. Quite a good drinkable product, been around a number of years, and the ad featured two couples of what seemed to have been a romantic or intimate dinner for the four at, I guess, the house of the couple I will come to in a minute. And it seemed as if the evening was breaking up and they were saying goodbye, so one couple moves off the set. And the remaining couple sit down on a couch, lights are low, and out comes a bottle of wine, glass of wine, and they share this, and the voiceover says something to the effect that in moments of closest night like this, you know, wine is a great thing. Okay, from a strategy of marketing the product, I'd say pretty good. Wine is certainly makes people sociable, is a fine accompaniment to good moments with friends, and of course, and with them, kind of a follow-up here, further good moments of the couple together. So far, I think it's a good concept, a good way to market wine, create interest in wine, certainly perfectly legitimate. But here's the kicker. Who is this couple that are, I won't say getting intimate, but they're sitting together on a couch and obviously enjoying each other's company at the end of a fine evening with friends. Well, who are the couple? She's a negress and he's white. I mean, middle-aged, 40-ish type of couple. And I have to think this is utterly gratuitous. Now, mixed couples are under 5% of couples in Canada. So it's not a, let's say, it's when you show a mixed couple, you're not showing, in a sense, every man, or average people. This is very much a tiny minority. Among mixed couples, black men are much more likely to be with white women, and I don't think it's a good thing, than vice versa, in this case, a black woman and a white man. This is very much an even tinier subset of, depending on your point of view, perversion, weirdness. So I ask myself, well, why would you choose to show this? I'm writing to the company, I'm going to say I find it offensive. Number one, I don't approve of mixed race, obviously, sex, mixed race sex. I think it's wrong. I think it's wrong from a religious point of view. I think it's also wrong from a racial point of view. Now, not a lot of people would say that out loud, but I'm prepared to say that. But I also want to just leave the idea, I'm offended. So if the idea was to intrigue me, or leave me with a nice, warm, fuzzy feeling about the good purposes or the good uses of wine, and here would be an instance where it could come into play, couples furthering the idea of friendship, intimacy, couples, and so on with wine. Hey, I'd have no problem with that, and otherwise, I'd actually probably think well of Enniskillen. But what are you trying to push on me? Now, I like to think that advertisers and companies are pragmatic. That is, they're going to try to target likely potential drinkers. I don't think mixed race couples, particularly where the man is white and the woman is a negress, are a particularly large segment of the population, nor do I think they're particularly big wine drinkers or potential wine drinkers. I suppose anybody's potential. But what I think the effect is on many people is a little bit off-putting. In my case, I'm offended because I think they're trying to put something over on us. And you know what I think the people behind these types of ads are really trying to say? This is the world we want you to get used to. Why should I have to get used to it? Why should I want it? Why should I not oppose this type of thing entirely? What this does is create acceptance of, I believe, a tiny minority of people who made bad choices. And I think it's important for us to protest. You know, there's a saying we used to have in the John Birch Society when I was in it in the 1970s. And that is, the letter not written influences nobody. Or to put it a little differently, we all have good intentions, at least I'd like to think we do. We all mean to do certain things. I include myself in that category too. But sometimes we don't get around to them. Well, that may be the way life is, but we have to remember the kind of the sober observation that the letter not written influences nobody. Political correctness, and I think this goes beyond political correctness. This is trying to mainstream or mainstream bad choices to try to make people think, well, they're just like everybody else. Well, they're not like everybody else. This is a bad choice. If a group does that in any significant numbers, the group disappears. A mixed race society ends up being just that, a mixed race society with a lot of rootless people. Not quite sure what they are. Anyway, more betrayal by corporate Canada. Oh, yes. Oh, my gosh. More political correctness. School material with squaw in it pulled for review. I love that. I love that term, review. What does it mean? Well, it probably means they're going to get rid of it. A package of educational materials used in the British Columbia secondary schools has been removed for review after a First Nations woman, okay, now, you need a bit of a politically correct translation. That's an Indian, okay? First Nations woman learned that her 14-year-old daughter had been asked to define the word squaw. The woman took the sword. We're not told who she is. And that's another thing that just so enrages me about politically correct Canada. Lots of certain people with lots of opinions wanting to shut this down and stifle that, but don't want their name used. Okay, anyway, so this nameless woman had an objection to her daughter, 14-year-old daughter, being asked to define the word squaw. Well, why not? In fact, her daughter ought to have an advantage because she's an Indian, so she would know that what a squaw is. A squaw is an old-fashioned term for a female Indian. It was not pejorative, although some people today might say it is, but it was not pejorative. It was simply the term used. The woman took to social media to express her outrage over the weekend about exercises of violent colonialism that her daughter was being asked to complete at Templeton Secondary School in Vancouver. Now, violent colonialism. Where's the violence there? Kid wasn't beaten up. Nobody was threatened with violence. You see what I mean about the almost hysterical verbal overkill? So, violent colonialism. The material centers around the book Susanna Moody, Roughing It in the Bush, originally published in 1852, and language in it that a teaching guide in 2016 describes as racist and discriminatory. This says as much about the weird teacher's guide as it does about the book. I never taught this book, but then this book is actually more properly in a Canadian history course. I taught literature and writing, but Susanna Moody was an English woman, and she was one of the early pioneers in the English settlements that opened up in Upper Canada, which is now the province of Ontario, in the years after the Napoleonic Wars. So she was in Canada in the 1830s and 1840s, and her book was a memoir of roughing it in the bush. The land, especially in the part of southern Ontario she went to, which is around Peterborough, was not particularly lush farm country. There's backbreaking labor necessary to clear the stones and rocks and stumps and so on. It was tough work. It was also tough for an English woman who had no background in rural colonial living, in backwoods Canadian life, and it really was a huge culture shock. It's an extremely interesting book, and would inform youngsters, high school students, or even adults about a part of our history that, you know, I think is largely certainly unknown to certainly to urban people today. The word squaw shows up 39 times. And an exercise asks students to match the term with its appropriate language definition. Now, that doesn't sound like violent colonialism. In fact, it sounds more to me like neo-Marxist deconstruction, you know, judging this woman by the standards of today. The Indians in that part of this part of the country were not in conflict with whites. This was not an Indian war. It was not pejorative. It was just the way people, the commonly used word for a female Indian. Anyway, but what the student, I guess, was supposed to come up with was the appropriate language. Oh, yeah, I love that, appropriate. The appropriate word, phraseology, instead of squaw, was an Aboriginal woman. Well, would a female Indian do, or an Indian female? Indian is not the current preferred word. Oh, yeah, talk about Second Story Press, which publishes the teaching material, says that it has removed the material for review and sincerely regrets any pain it has caused. What pain? It's a learning experience. The Vancouver School Board, where the book is used, says the board is looking into the context in which these materials were used. Well, that can mean almost anything and nothing. But yes, context is important. Was it used as an opportunity to laugh at Indians? I highly doubt that. In very left-wing, very, very politically correct British Columbia, I highly doubt that. Well, it looks as though the majority liberals on the Heritage Committee are going to try to ram through a study of Islamophobia in Canada, and it also appears the committee was charged under a motion which we fought strongly, but which passed in the spring, of a motion was called M103, and it condemned Islamophobia and charged the committee to report back within 8 months as to measures the government of Canada could take to combat Islamophobia. Well, first of all, there is much confusion as to exactly what it is they're going to combat. Literally, Islamophobia is the fear of Muslims. Well, is that something that should be combated? I would say no. I think reasonable people in the West, considering the ongoing terrorist actions against the West, including as recently as last weekend or last Friday, where a would-be firebomber or bombers tried to set off a wicked device on the London subway, or tube as they call it over there, and apparently part of it did go off, creating a fireball which roared through the station and burned a number of people. No, luckily, none fatally. But the greater good luck was that the bomb the main part of the bomb failed to explode. And this bomb, made by radical Muslims, contained such lovely devices as nuts and bolts and nails. And the reports were that had it gone off in the crowded area, there would have been mass carnage, dozens and dozens of deaths. Now, I know the politically correct and even some Muslim spokesmen will bleat, but they're not real Muslims. No, they say they are, and many Muslim clerics approve of it. Even in the United Kingdom, support for Sharia law is high among Muslims. Support for groups like ISIS is considerable. Now, it may be up to Muslim theologians to debate the fine points of whether these people are correct in what they're doing, but they're doing it in the name of a faith. And I would say any reasonable person has total justification to be a little bit fearful of Muslims. Are all Muslims terrorists? Of course not. Do all Muslims approve of this? Probably many do not. But I think any reasonable person has every good cause to be a little cautious about them. Now, phobia doesn't mean psychotic violence, because we are a little cautious about Muslims, or so many of us are. It doesn't mean we want to go out and kill them, or particularly injure them. Well, now, that being what Islamophobia is, why would these preachy politicians presume to try to combat it? This misinterprets, and I think deliberately, the true role of an elected representative. Hear that word, representative. The job of members of parliament is not to lecture us about what our opinions are ought or ought not to be, but the role is to listen to our opinions and try to respond to those opinions and come up with legislation that will most closely meet what the constituents want. Members of, this is a report out of the National Post. Members of Parliament of different political stripes have been getting an earful about a controversial anti-Islamophobia motion passed this spring. On Monday, the House of Commons Heritage Committee began a study of racism and religious discrimination required by Motion 103, a motion whose sponsor, Liberal Member of Parliament, actually from near my community, Iqra Khalid, she's a Pakistani, received death threats and hate mail after she tabled it in December. Well, I'd be very interested to know what those death threats were. Hate mail, well, hate mail is, it doesn't tell you much about the mail. It tells you a good deal about the person who makes that accusation. When you hear somebody saying that's hate speech or that's hate propaganda, it means it's speech they hate. Winnipeg Liberal MP Dan Vandal said people have complained to his office over fears about Sharia law. Arvi Firani, a Liberal MP in Toronto, said constituents have been asking whether the government is chilling their ability to raise legitimate questions about faith. Well, that's right. If they are tasked with combating Islamophobia, I think people have every reason to fear, given that that tends to be the predilection of certainly of Canadian politicians, well, we need a law to restrict it. That's exactly what will happen, that speech will be constrained. I've never seen such such fomented anger, concern, and misconception about any a motion before Parliament as applied to Motion 103, said Green Party leader Elizabeth May, who is a twit of the First Order. Vandal said discussions of the motion spun out of control into a bunch of lies. Racism and religious discrimination have no place in Canadian society, said Khalid. Racism and discrimination. Really? I think racism, what's that? What is that? That's isn't that preference for your own people? If we didn't have preference for our own people, would we have a Canadian Pakistani association, a Canadian Muslim association, the Assembly of First Nations, that's Indians? No. But all these groups are out to promote themselves and protect themselves. Discrimination? Well, not quite sure what she means, but any choice involves discrimination. I choose this, not that. I'm discriminating against what I'm not choosing. Khalid's motion asked the government to recognize the need to quell the increasing public climate of hate and fear, and call for the Heritage Committee to study how the government could fight systemic racism and religious discrimination, and to collect data to contextualize hate crime reports. Sounds like a work-making exercise, a busy work, to quell the increasing public climate of hate and fear. What about Muslims behaving? What about Muslim leaders coming out strongly denouncing every act of terrorism and turning in members of their own community where they're involved with or being recruited by overseas groups like ISIS. Conservative member of parliament David Sweet said he didn't mind pointing to the elephant in the room. There's a large percentage of people in Canada who are concerned that their speech would be stifled if something like Islamophobia wasn't really defined. Well, yeah, and that has always been the goal of the professional anti-racist. In fact, Ikra Khalid's at least one of her relatives is closely tied to a radical Muslim group. I believe it's the Muslim League, and many of these groups actively campaign for blasphemy laws in the West, which would make criticism of Islam a criminal offense. On Monday, Elizabeth May and NDP MP Jenny Kwan both spoke of the need to fight the rise of racism. "We're living in a time when, to my horror, white supremacy is being normalized," said May. Well, what exactly is white supremacy? I think maybe what she's hearing and is beginning to mess her adult diaper over are increasing calls for immigration reform and the realization on the part of many whites that our country is being immigrated away from us. We are being replaced, not by accident, not by having lost a war, but by policy of all parties. There appears to have been efforts to cut back on the list of people who will be heard as witnesses. And I was told last night that some people who had already been accepted have been unaccepted, and the ones who've been unaccepted are all people who are highly critical of the motion, highly critical of the whole idea that Parliament should condemn Islamophobia, whatever that is, and should furthermore take some sort of steps to do something about it. Well, CAFE, the Canadian Association for Free Expression, of which I'm the director, will be seeking recognition before the committee to make a presentation, particularly from the point of view of attacks on free speech. And we have credentials. Founded in 1983, we have been accepted as interveners in many human rights cases. I represent a number of the victims of Section 13 of the Canadian Human Rights Act. That was the internet censorship section that was used by anti-free speech wild man Richard Warman to attack and bedevil probably 20 or 30, depending on how you count it, owners of websites and individuals until it was actually Section 13 of the Canadian Human Rights Act was repealed in 2012, repealed by Parliament. So we have a lot of experience in matters of free speech, and I'm going to seek to have our voice heard by this committee. And that, of course, in itself is going to be controversial because they like to toss out, well, not the committee necessarily, but the politically correct and the anti-free speech forces in this country like to toss around terms like white supremacist, racist, and it's always interesting to me that if white supremacy is supposed to be some sort of totalitarian philosophy, why is it that people like me, who, and I'm an outspoken free speech advocate, why would it be that people like me work so hard to defend free speech? Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. I'll be back with you in just a few minutes. Going to take a a short musical interlude here, and I've been playing some songs of late that have been sent my way, and I always appreciate people that have a song they'd like me to play or want to bring to my attention, and generally I'm glad to do it. And this is sent to me by a good friend of mine in Australia, in Queensland, Australia. His name is Jay, and Jay's a very religious man, a prodigious writer, just a first-rate fellow. And this is a song that I find so very typically Australian. You know, I gotta love the Aussies. They're blunt, straightforward, opinionated. They place a lot of stress on loyalty. And this is a song that's kind of aimed at the the Muslim faction in Australia that does not seem to show at times much respect for traditional Australian values. In fact, for the country that so generously, some would say so foolishly, let them in. And this is billed as an alternative national anthem. And thanks to Jay in Queensland, that's the tropical northern state of Australia. Thanks to Jay for sending this my way.
Well, I'm a true blue Aussie and a dinky dog. Love me country and I love this life. I love me missus and the kids as well. And I hate to say but it's gone to hell. The politicians want to sell our land to anyone with cap in hand. And let them take our Aussie jobs, fill her up with foreign mobs. I swear, true blue Australian made. Yeah, we're dinky dying. We love our country, we love our way of life. Don't take us for granted, mate, when we give our hand. We're asking you to join us, not take over this land. Well, our top and trolley's been hijacked with all that bloody hell crap. A buggered how me cat can tell, he's turned into a Muslim now. To let them pay for what they use and plainly label our foods. It's bad enough to comp this shit, but the buggers make us pay for it. We're through the Australia, mate. Yeah, we're dinky dying. We love our country, we love our way of life. Don't take us for granted, mate, when we give our hand. We're asking you to join us, not take over this land. But if you want to join us living here, let us make it bloody clear. Respect our home as well our law, or else you'll soon be shown the door. Polygamy is not our way, or forcing women to obey. One special thing I've got to say, marrying kids is not okay. We're through blue Australia, mate. Yeah, we're dinky dying. We love our country, we love our way of life. Don't take us for granted, mate, when we give our hand. We're asking you to join us, not take over the land. There's one more thing you gotta know, to all you knobs who run the show. Think we'll take this lion down? Well, think again, you clowns. We're true blue Australia, mate. Yeah, we're dinky dying. We love our country, we love our way of life. Don't take us for granted, mate, when we give our hand. We're asking you to join us, not take us over the land. We're through true blue Australian mate. Here with Inky Dye, we love our country, we love our way of life. Don't take us for granted, mate, when we give our hand. We're asking you to join us, not take over the land. And if you don't like it, you can piss off.
True Blue Australian. Like that, like and thank, want to thank Jay for saying that my way. I always appreciate input from our listeners. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. For the last few nights, I've been playing some music by another artist who is was new to me. That probably says more about me than about the artist, and his name is Rebel Sun. And I am this is looking for one of his songs that we played this is a Bury Me in Southern Ground, Rebel Sun. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me.
Dixieland, final stand. I don't care if I'm in a box or not when they lay me down. Just bury me in southern ground.
That's Rebel Sun and Bury Me in Southern Ground. I'm going to play one more tune, and this is Mr. Confederate Man. Hope you like this.
I was just a little boy in elementary school. English and math and science class, learning the golden rule. I learned how to add and how to subtract, how to multiply and divide. I learned about bugs and I learned about plants and I learned how to read and write. But my most favorite class of all was my last class of the day, when my history teacher would tell us tales of old times long gone away. I was amazed at the way she knew all the people and their names and the places and the dates. That's when I first learned about General Lee and his 13 rebel states. One day she came to school with a big brown grocery bag. She opened it up, we all helped her hold up this great big egg-shaped flag. She said, "Class, now only a fool will tell you this flag is a symbol of hate. It represents the men who fought and died with pride for our Confederate states. Your assignment tonight, I want you to write, I want you to pretend that one of these brave men came back to life. Now what would you say to him?" Well, the school bell rang and I thought, as the bus carried me across town, I got out my pencil and my notebook pad, and this is what I wrote down. I wrote, "Mr. Confederate Man, I'd like to shake your hand for giving your life for Dixieland. Mr. Confederate Man." The next day in history class, I put my paper on the teacher's desk. Then she called me up in front of everyone because she said she liked mine the best. As I walked up to the head of the class, my teacher smiled and she nodded at me. Then I saw a tear roll down her cheek as I began to read. I read, "Mr. Confederate Man, I'd like to shake your hand for giving your life die for Dixieland, Mr. Confederate man. At home reading through the news just the other day, when I ran across my old teacher's name and I saw where she had passed away. With a bittersweet smile I looked up at my wall, a wrinkled paper in an old wood frame, where underneath pencil words almost faded away, she had marked a great big red A. Plus, Mr. Confederate man, I'd like to shake your hand for giving your life for Dixieland. Mr. Confederate man, I wrote, Mr. Confederate man, I'd like to shake your hand for giving your life for Dixieland. Mr. Confederate man.
And that's Rebel Son and Mr. Confederate Man. I'd like to play some of those old Rebel songs, and I think that there's been a new and renewed interest in this because of the attacks on the Confederate monuments that have been going on apace recently. I think a lot of people are beginning to realize that you've got to be proud of your heritage, or if the wrecking crew of the cultural Marxists will be only too happy to try to take it away from you. Well, I must say, I'm not surprised, but I'm surprised, I guess. Oh, yes. Talk about useless. There was a punk rocker about 20 years ago named Johnny Rotten. I don't know if there was actually such a person or somebody who riffed off the name, but Janie Useless. in terms of rotten and useless, here we've got a senior military commander in Canada, and he's an army brigade commander, Colonel Daniel Stepaniuk, has sent out a memo. This is what it says. I will not recommend any new honorary appointments unless we improve our diversity targets. This was an August 13th email. I will not recommend any extension of any current honorary appointments unless we move to satisfy our diversity targets. When I say gender diversity targets, think 50-50. Okay, what's this all about? Well, regiments in Canada, in addition to having an appointed field commander and officer corps, have honorary commanders. And these are people usually prominent in the community, sometimes people who have had something to do with the regiment. And Christy Blatchford's excellent article on this points out that combat roles, fewer than 15% of people in the combat roles are females, for very good reasons. Okay, despite all this blather about equality, men and women are not the same, and in general, most women are not particularly eager to take up as a career toting a rifle and shooting it out with potential enemies. Okay, so the people who tend to be associated with a regiment tend, in general, to be men. So when it comes time to appoint an honorary colonel for the regiment, it's quite obvious that the pool is largely made up of men. Well, not for oldest Colonel Daniel Stepaniak. Diversity means 50-50. Okay, find some woman somewhere, and maybe Betsy the bartender, make her the honorary colonel. What a joke. Meanwhile, important things like demanding proper equipment. The Canadian Army is woefully under-equipped. At the present time, if we were got into a mission overseas and had to resupply our forces, well, we don't actually have a resupply vessel. It's after much controversy and scandal and so on, well, it's being built. I see. We have planes that are so old, the Baron von Richthofen's Fokker could probably have shoot them down. We've got the CF-18s. Okay, I'm exaggerating a bit, but they are several decades out of date. Three governments, Liberal, Conservative, and now Liberal again, have kicked around the idea. They've studied, they've monitored, they've had reports on replacing it. Well, the present government, who is ruled by a person who doesn't take national defense very seriously at all, the trust fund kid, has decided that there will be a call for tenders in 2019, just after the next election. In fact, of course, that they don't take the defense seriously at all. So the Canadian Armed and the Canadian Armed Forces should be protecting our border, not worrying about gender equity. What are they doing? Well, the commander of the Canadian Armed Forces, General Jonathan Vance, he was prancing in the gay pride parade along with the trust fund kid a couple of weekends ago. Meanwhile, we're being invaded. Duh, what's an army supposed to do? Defend the country? Yeah, right, that's what they ought to be doing. Instead, their units of the Canadian Army down on the Quebec U.S. border are constructing tents for the illegals. Kind of a motel on the cheap sort of operation. Disgusting. Oh, yes, yes. Relationships roadblock. David Eddy does a column once a week in the Globe and Mail, and this is called Hands It Free Advice. Relationship roadblock. My boyfriend's dead. I love my boyfriend deeply, writes this person. But lately I've been finding it increasingly difficult to spend time with his father, who makes racist, homophobic, and sexist comments during visits. His comments are extreme and insulting recently. Recently we went to a restaurant and were seated near a Middle Eastern couple. When they left, he couldn't stop talking about how he hates Muslims. I'm often the only one who speaks up and tells him his comments are inappropriate. No, she's inappropriate. That catch-all politically correct term of disapproval. He's good. Bottom line, he has a right to an opinion. In fact, being older, he has a bit more of a right to a respect and opinion. Notice that even by her account, he waited till the Muslim family had left, and he uttered his comments. He dislikes Muslims. Well, okay, that's an opinion. He may have good reasons to, maybe not. But imagine her telling him his comments are inappropriate. I've told him that his sexist comments are personally offensive, but it doesn't change anything. I even told him his behavior will likely damage his relationship with his future grandchildren. This has led to arguments with my boyfriend, who doesn't want to get in between our arguments. No, and I agree. She has a right to her, obviously, lefty opinions, as does the potential father-in-law. Notice the implied, well, it's not even implied, the blackmail. That if you don't shut up, I may not let you see your grandchildren when and if they come. Well, the advice is kind of a bit all over the place. He says, well, she's done the right thing. She's confronted him and shown him consequences. Then goes on to say, why? What is this mania to opine, to air prejudice when one is not, in fact, a paid pundit? In other words, he too is blaming the father for having what, I guess, in the opinion of these, the nameless woman and writer David Eddy, are improper opinions. I hope the father-in-law tears a strip off her and perhaps puts it to the son that he does not appreciate her behavior. Her behavior is inappropriate. The older generation deserves some respect, and I understand totally why the son would not want to get in into it with the father. Why he would not? I mean, blood is thicker than water. He does not want to be forced to take a side, and the woman, I think, would be far better off if she prefaced her her blast, or actually toned down her blast by saying, he's got a right to an opinion, as do I, and maybe our opinions differ. Well, this is Paul Frohman. You're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Coming back with you again tomorrow night, same time, midnight Eastern Time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning, 4 in the afternoon. All of these are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever.